I think about the life I live, a figure made of clay, and think about the things I lost, the things I gave away. And when I'm in a certain mood, I search the halls and look. One night I found these magic words in a magic book. Throw it away, throw it away. Give your life, give your love, each and every day. And keep your hand wide open, let the sun shine too, 'cause you can never lose a thing if it belongs to you. There's a hand that rocks the cradle.
Abby Lincoln, Aminata Moseka, with Throw It Away. It's from her 2007 album, Abby Sings Abby. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And a crammed program today. A muted, more controlled President Donald Trump occupied the podium at a joint session of Congress last night, his first formal address to the body, and presented a legislative agenda meant to occupy the opposition and other detractors. Even before he said a word of his one-hour speech, Trump's address set off a torrent of protests among Democratic legislators themselves and among activist groups across the country over key policy positions that Trump was expected to push Congress to enact into law and, of course, to have Congress fund. Public reaction, however, showed that Trump's revamped demeanor helped him gain some ground among people who previously had found him most objectionable. So now that Trump has thrown down the proverbial gauntlet, how will the all but vanquished Democrats respond? That's where we are going today. It was a lengthy speech, as I said, more than an hour, a little bit more, but covered a lot of ground. And clearly you can tell from the sheer volume of stuff that one of the tactics is to overwhelm Congress with all these things that he wants done. It will keep them occupied for a long time and more than likely will keep him in a way off their backs. So because they'll be so concerned, they'll be so tied up with fighting legislatively all these initiatives that he wants done. But also, we have the problem within Congress is that, of course, the Democratic Party has been just absolutely clobbered as a result of the last election. And to what degree they could even get themselves together to mount a credible counteroffensive, that's up to question. And how will they now engage in real battle with Donald Trump? That too is up to question. Well, let's talk about what Trump wanted. It's a long speech, so I can't play the whole thing, but we can give you an idea of what he covered. Last night, he talked about a constitutional amendment to impose term limits on all members of Congress, a hiring freeze on federal employees, a requirement that for every new federal regulation, two existing regulations must be eliminated, a 5-year ban on White House and congressional officials becoming lobbyists after they leave government service, a lifetime ban for White House officials lobbying on behalf of a foreign government, a complete ban on White House officials or federal officials from lobbying U.S. government from a foreign government. Major issues. But then it got more intense as he tackled things like immigration, deportation, the what he called the serious vetting of immigrants to the United States. He talked about I'm trying to simplify the whole raft of things that he highlighted, saying that these would be major items. Of course, the building of the wall, in which he still insists that Mexico will pay for the wall. He talked about withdrawing from NAFTA and, of course, the TPP. He talked about school choice being the law of the land. He talked about credits given for elder care and child care. He talked about the issue of reducing but not giving free care, tuition at the 2-year and 4-year college level. He laid out a whole plan, none of it specific, just giving overviews of what it is he envisions getting done in terms of legislation. He talked about rebuilding or beefing up the military and about beefing up local and statewide law enforcement authorities to tackle crime. And, of course, to put in place systems and methods that would achieve that. He talked about cleaning the swamp in Washington, restoring confidence by clearing the swamp of Washington's bureaucracy, its legendary bureaucracy. He talked about restoring safety as a major point of his planks for legislative action, and suspending, he didn't drop that at all, suspending immigration from terror-prone regions of the world, talked about increasing production by granting special concessions to the trade sector and the production sector, the manufacturing sector. And, of course, he talked about ending the loopholes, many loopholes that corporations and manufacturers have of moving their operations abroad, especially to tax-friendly havens, and then doubly benefiting by bringing their produced materials back to the United States tax-free. The Offshoring Act is what he said would be the answer to that. So a lot of things on the table to legislate and, of course, to fund, which is the function of Congress, to fund a lot of these things. And he did not give any specifics at all. He couldn't in the time that he had allotted. So he just gave the overview. But even in the overview, you can see how much he intended to get done. And in the diplomatic world, it was a throwdown. What he did do was indicate to Congress that he means business. It's going to be a fight because this, he says, is his personal contract with the American voter. And he intends to fulfill his promises. Now, there was a response, and it was given, the task was given to former Kentucky Governor Steve Beshear to respond to Trump's presentation. And he did a very nice job, but not nearly as comprehensive as one that Bernie Sanders did. He recorded a 14-minute long video after Trump's speech last night and went into greater detail, and I want to share that with you today. The details he gave of not only critical of what Trump said, but also he addressed the things that Trump did not say in his speech. Sanders, interestingly, I think of it as, for all intents and purposes, a Democratic response, because although Sanders is an independent, the lone independent in Congress, in the Senate, he often, of course, concurs with the Democrats. And this is one of the instances in which I think it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to consider Sanders's response, to substitute it, because it went into greater detail than the response from former Governor Beshear. So here's Bernie Sanders reacting to Donald Trump's speech last night and the legislative initiatives he intends to get done immediately. Here's Bernie Sanders.
Good evening. Before I respond to President Trump's speech and what he said tonight, I wanted to say a few words about what he didn't say, because when you analyze a speech, sometimes what is more important is what somebody does not say as opposed to what they actually say. Some examples. At a time when over half of older Americans have no retirement savings, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about Social Security or Medicare. During the campaign, as we all remember, President Trump promised over and over and over again that he would not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. It was a cornerstone of his campaign. But in his first address to the nation, he didn't even mention Social Security or Medicare once, not a single time. Even worse, President Trump has proposed a massive cut to Medicaid, massive cut, threatening the nursing home care of millions of senior citizens and the health care of many, many of our children. I urge President Trump, keep your promises. Tell the American people, tweet to the American people that you will not cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Further, I did not hear President Trump tonight mention the words income and wealth inequality, or the fact that we now have the widest gap between the very rich and everyone else since the 1920s. I did not hear President Trump mention the fact that as a result of the disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, a 5-4 decision, we now have a corrupt campaign finance system that is allowing billionaires to buy elections and undermine American democracy. How could you give a speech to the nation and not talk about that enormously important issue? Furthermore, not only did President Trump not mention the issue of voter suppression, what Republican governors are doing all over this country to make it harder for people to participate in our democracy, but the truth of the matter is, his administration is now working overtime with Republican governors to make it harder for young people low-income people, senior citizens, and people of color to vote. That is an outrage. Perhaps most astoundingly, at a time when the scientific community is virtually unanimous in telling us that climate change is real, that it is caused by human activity, that it is already causing devastating problems in our country and all over the world, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about the need to combat climate change, the greatest environmental threat facing our planet. Not only did he not mention climate change, he pledged to increase our dependency on fossil fuels. Furthermore, at a time when we have more people in jail than any other country on earth, disproportionately African American, Latino, Native American, I did not hear President Trump say one word about how he was going to fix a broken criminal justice system. Yes, we must support the hard work of men and women in the police departments and the sheriff's departments all over this country. But we must end also the disgrace of having more people in jail than any other country on earth.
Eyeglass World salutes Angie for always being on the money. That's why she gets...
than any other country on earth. Furthermore, at a time when we need the best educated workforce in the world to compete in a highly competitive global economy, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about the need to lower the cost of college and to do what countries all over the world are doing, and that is to make public colleges and universities tuition-free. It's an enormously important issue, impacting millions of families throughout this country. Not one word about making colleges more affordable, not one word about addressing the crisis of student debt. During his campaign, President Trump told us that he was going to take on Wall Street and drain the swamp. Remember that? He was going to drain the swamp. Well, the swamp, big time, is now in his administration, which has more millionaires and billionaires than any presidential administration in history. Amazingly enough, for somebody who was going to drain the swamp, who was going to take on Wall Street, his chief economic advisor, Gary Cohn, is the former president of Goldman Sachs, one of the major financial institutions that paid billions of dollars in fines for their illegal activity. That's really draining the swamp. Needless to say, I did not hear President Trump say one word about another campaign promise that he made to the American people, and that was to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Now, that's a little bit about what Trump did not say tonight. Let me just say a few words about what he did say. The truth is that some of what President Trump said tonight, it sounds good on the surface. But it doesn't sound so good if you dig just a little deeper beneath the surface. President Trump told us that we need to invest $1 trillion in our infrastructure, in our crumbling infrastructure, to create millions of new jobs. And you know what? He is absolutely right. That's something that I have been working on for years. But the specifics of the financing plan that he has provided us so far are absolutely wrong. We cannot rebuild our infrastructure by providing billions of dollars in tax breaks to Wall Street and large corporations. Donald Trump said tonight that we need to promote clean air and clean water. And to be very honest with you, because I was only a few feet away from the president, I had a difficult time not laughing out loud when he said that. Because on this very, very day, he signed an executive order rolling back President Obama's clean water rules and has appointed the most anti-environmental EPA administrator in our nation's history. President Trump said tonight that he wants to substantially increase funding for the Pentagon. What he didn't say tonight is that he will come up with that $84 billion in increased funding for the Pentagon by slashing programs that benefit the working people of this country, that benefit the elderly, that benefit the children, the sick, and the poor. Now, here's the truth. At a time when our country spends more on defense than the next 12 countries combined, when virtually every major defense contractor has committed fraud and has had to pay fines to the federal government for their fraudulent activity, at a time when the Pentagon has buried evidence of a $125 billion in bureaucratic waste, President Trump wants to increase defense spending by $84 billion over the next year and a half. And let me be very clear in stating that I think those priorities are wrong. We should not be cutting massively programs for people in need and then significantly expanding spending for the military. And let's be also clear. The $84 billion that President Trump wants to pump into the bloated Pentagon budget could, just as one example, provide free tuition at every public college and university in this country and begin to reduce the crushing burden of student debt in America. That is a choice. Do we add another $80+ billion to the Pentagon, or do we allow every qualified young American the ability to go to college tuition-free in a public college and university and substantially reduce student debt? I think the choice is clear. I think we do not need to greatly increase Pentagon spending. And while President Trump wants to slash programs that the elderly, the children, the sick, and the poorest Americans desperately rely on, he also thinks that it is a great idea to provide nearly $3 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%. Middle class shrinking, 43 million people living in poverty, the rich doing phenomenally well, and Donald Trump wants to provide $3 trillion in tax breaks for the people on top. That is an outrage. Furthermore, President Trump claimed tonight American corporations pay the highest tax rates in the world. We're going to have to lower substantially tax rates on large corporations. What he said is untrue, not true. According to the Government Accountability Office, one out of five large profitable corporations pays nothing, zero in federal income tax. Today, we are losing $100 billion in revenue every year, because corporations are stashing their cash in the Cayman Islands and other offshore tax havens. These corporations don't need a tax cut. They need to start paying their fair share of taxes. Tonight, President Trump once again made it clear that he plans on working with Republicans in Congress who want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, throw 20 million Americans off of health insurance, privatize Medicare, make massive cuts in Medicaid, raise the cost of prescription drugs for seniors, eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood, while at the same time, he wants to give yet another massive tax break to the wealthiest Americans, which is what would happen if the Affordable Care Act were repealed. As he did during his campaign, Donald Trump claimed that he would bring down the cost of prescription drugs. A few weeks ago, he even said that the pharmaceutical industry was, quote, getting away with murder, end quote. But if Donald Trump really wanted to take on the pharmaceutical industry, he would have told his Republican friends in the House and the Senate to pass legislation, which I introduced today with 20 senators, allowing Americans to import safe, low-cost medicine from Canada. We should not have to pay the highest prices in the world for the medicine we use. Since the beginning of this year, we have seen unprecedented grassroots energy from Maine to California. Last week, at Republican town hall meetings across the country and at more than 150 rallies that took place from coast to coast, the American people sent a clear message about what they expect from Congress. As a result, the Republicans are getting very, very worried. They're not so cocky anymore about simply repealing Obamacare. And they should be worried, because the American people are standing up. And what they are saying loudly and clearly is, no, you're not going to repeal the Affordable Care Act. No, you're not going to destroy it. You are going to improve it. And in my view, what we must be doing right now is not only defending the Affordable Care Act, not only improving the Affordable Care Act, we have got to move forward to join the rest of the industrialized world and guarantee health care to all people as a right, not a privilege. We must go forward towards a Medicare for All single-payer program. But defeating these attempts to destroy the Affordable Care Act and transfer even more of our nation's wealth to Donald Trump and his billionaire friends is going to take all of us coming together and making our voices heard. Those of you who attended rallies or town hall meetings, keep showing up. Keep calling Congress and continue the fight. The Republicans are now on the defensive, and we've got to continue to push them back. Those of you who haven't taken action yet, we need your voices. We need your action. Only together, when millions of people stand up and fight for economic justice, for social justice, for racial justice, for environmental justice, only then can we create the political revolution that will turn this country around. Thank you all, and have a great evening.
That was U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont essentially making the case for the Democrats against the intended agenda of Donald Trump, which he presented in his first joint session with Congress last night. The question that we will be tackling now, or begin to tackle, and we know that the Democratic Party is severely constrained by virtue of the fact that it suffered so many losses. It suffered devastating losses in this last election. And how, therefore, are they going to fight? How do you beat back Trump's agenda? With what? You have only so many votes. And you have a juggernaut of an administration in power. They have the White House. They have Congress, both houses of Congress. They have several of the state legislatures, they have many governorships, and even at the local level, the Republicans just made a clean sweep. So here you have a point at which we cannot escape the reality that it's an uphill climb. The Democrats have not really amassed a great deal of ground. They haven't gained a lot of ground even before Trump came in. They got lackadaisical. They didn't do very much. It was not a big priority for them because they just believed that they will be in power for a long time. They couldn't believe that there would come a time, and this soon, that they will have to scratch for every possible vote that they could get to put up something of a credible fight. But here it is. And we have already begun to see that the people, recognizing that there is no other alternative, they have to put up a fight themselves. They have to do the work themselves. And there are limits to what they could do. They could mobilize, but in the end, it comes down to votes. Votes in the House, votes at the state level, votes at the city level, and local level. You could march all you want, but in the end, that's where the fight comes down to. So, based on what we've been talking about for some time now, how do you see this happening? Even if you got a lot of people out in the streets, when it comes down to the business of votes in, you know, a state house of some sort, some kind of an official body where votes are what determines what happens, who wins and who loses, what is the formula now? We'll take the short break and come to your thoughts. And the number today is 646-918-6619. 646-918-6619. We'll take the short break and come to that very important question right after that.
Give your love, live your life each and every day, and keep your hand wide open, let sunshine through, 'cause you can never lose a thing if it belongs to you.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're talking about President Trump's speech to a joint session of Congress last night, in which he further iterated his legislative priorities that he, of course, expects Congress to enact and fund. And the question now comes down to the votes and how will the Democratic Party go up against the juggernaut of Trump / Republicans? From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese, how's it going?
Okay, thanks. Thanks for your note. I really appreciate it.
Okay, no problem. So I guess the question on the table is, how are the Democrats are going to go up against the powerful Republicans now? Is that the question on the table?
The Trump agenda, yes.
Okay. Well, I don't see it happening anytime soon. As you have stated and as we've all noticed, the Democratic Party's in disarray. I think when you look at American politics, you know, things like this go in phases. So the only thing, you know, they're going to have to do is just wait for the Republicans to collapse on themselves, because right now, you know, like you said, they control everything, you know, within the House, within the Senate, the White House. So, you know, the only thing we can do as people within the community is, like you said, you know, just prepare our defenses until this, you know, so-called war of politics ends itself or goes into another phase, because, you know, I think the only thing we can probably do is just let them shoot it out and just supply the ammo.
It's going to be a very brutal fight. And it is not, this is just the first phase of it. There's more to come.
Yes.
These are just some of the high priority items as Trump sees it. And he will get the backing even of a reluctant Republican Party. The fact is this, they know, is they have to take advantage of every opportunity they can and that they have to get through whatever it is that they've been meaning to get through, even if they don't like Trump. And many Republicans really don't like Trump at all. But he is heading up the winning team. And consolidated, it gives them the opportunity to get under the wire, whatever it is they want to get, you know, through. This is the problem that we have now. What does that mean? It means the people, you and I and others, we have now to go into a whole different mode that we're not accustomed to going into. We're not accustomed to fighting. We're accustomed to letting them fight. But it means that we have to change dramatically and fast. There's no time.
Yeah, and it also means we have to work behind the scenes as well, and you know, make sure that, you know, whatever strategies that we have to build, you know, for our defenses, you know, against this war, because, you know, just like you said, there are a lot of Republicans who don't like Trump, but right now they're not going to go hard at him right now. I see it simmering. And it'll probably happen, you know, sometime in the near future. But right now, they're going to go along with his plan, you know, until, you know, he screws up or somebody in his administration screws up. But while this is going on, yeah, you're right. You know, the policies that he's going to be implementing, you know, in the current president is going to affect us. And we just need to, you know, work in the background and make sure we have the defenses up, you know, to protect ourselves against, you know, what's coming.
What might those be? Some of those things be?
Well, one of the things that we can focus on is, you know, just economics. excuse me, making sure that, you know, trying to make sure that the money within our communities is at least being recycled a little longer than, you know, than it is now, just to gain some type of advantage. We can either do it as a community or just do it as an individual level. You know, I've, you know, tried to make a conscious effort to support, you know, businesses who do support, you know, our, you know, people in my community. So, you know, that's, you know, one step that, you know, we can do as far as, you know, putting up some of those defenses. You know, that's just one thing. But there's a lot of other things that we can do, you know, to try to have a defense against this, again, you know, against these policies that's coming.
Okay. 646-918-6619. Maat, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, and we send you blessings of miraculous healing. I didn't write because I knew there was some crisis, but I was holding my breath and so glad to hear your voice. It's so important what you have to say to us and your analysis. In response to the question, and I want to answer that second part that you asked, Henry, first of all, the Democrats need to be about a lot of obstruction. They also need to, they have these big congressional offices, they also need to come up with some white papers that can be popularized as to what's the consequences, the serious consequences of his policy. Trump was on the teleprompter, and you know he's one of those undeveloped Geminis, so when he's on the teleprompter, that's just a twin of his. That's not really him. And I want to say one of the things that I haven't heard much discussion about is this same thing, and Kathy Griffin also recognized that she's a comedian. I saw her, I think it was CNN, where during the Nazi era, they tagged the Jews by publishing their alleged crimes, you know. So this idea where he comes up with is called Voice, Victims of Immigrant Crime Engagement, where he's going to be, he's going to have a Department of Homeland Security obviously going to be creating a database. And it makes no sense because, first of all, it's something that happened during the Nazi era, so we don't want to go there. And the immigrants actually have one of the lowest crime rates. And, of course, he misstated or he lied about. He keeps holding on to those murder statistics that he's gotten all wrong. So we know that law and order is a code for, in fact, his main guy, Bannon, comes from Breitbart that has a section called Black Crime. And it's hard for me to get on that site and look at it, but we must do that at some point because we're coming up next. And we need to deal with this law and order piece. One of the things that I thought about, Eutrice, on that was my living in Canada for a couple years. And because you don't live in segregated communities like we do in the U.S., you have the police, which we must get out in the open, that form a role of a type of occupation, and how we're so easily assassinated, named, trucked into their incarceration system, et cetera, et cetera. So that needs to be looked very closely about because we know that that's beyond dog whistle. That's foghorn.
But here is the question. We are stuck now because we ourselves cannot enact these legislative changes or these legislative programs. We have to depend on some agency, and that is, of course, the political party. It so happens that the political party that in the main will be the opposition party against Trump's legislative initiatives is the Democratic Party that we have some problems with. So what are we to be prepared to do?
Well, we must let them understand that they must be obstructionists. For example, this Supreme Court nominee, we must hold that up. I mean, I heard Corey Chambers on Pix News call him on a tip of religious liberty, which is not true because he actually made a ruling that prevented that Hobby Lobby company to deprive women who don't have the same religious beliefs of a certain type of contraception, not even going toward the abortion question, but just not providing contraception. So, of course, that's ridiculous. So I say obstructionism and white papers. They need to come out with white papers and visioning about where we need to go and why. And the other piece of it is this whole idea of 54 additional million dollars in his for the War Department. That, first of all, he claims that he wasn't for the Iraq and all those other wars, but at the same time, he's obviously looking to move toward war, you see. And Bernie brought up a good piece that you shared with us, and that is what was the figure, $100 billion or whatever it is in waste, fraud, and abuse. He didn't even touch on that. We know that they sent pallets of billions of dollars to Iraq, and they became intercepted and dispersed, you know, and on and on. So I think this 54 more military is just absurd and ridiculous and doesn't address the people's need and doesn't bring any productivity, which he says he wants to do because the bombs, you know, are mostly one use type of situation.
Well, thank you.
Let's see
what David from Brooklyn has
Stay
to
well.
Say. So this is a very, very interesting dilemma that we find ourselves in. David, you're on the air.
Yes, you know, all of this rhetoric that's going on and the activities of President Trump should bring people to the point where they understanding that this government is not functioning in the interests of the people. What does it take for people to get it, you know, regardless of their phenotype, whatever it is, African, European, and so forth, that the activities of those people wasting time in Congress are functioning on a mission to achieve the goals of those people that are sitting at the top? This place is not running for the benefit of the people. What does it take for people to finally understand that? Even though the selected group that gets a little more of crumbs in terms of their phenotype, they get a little more, but can't they figure out now that the goal is not to benefit the masses of people that live here, but the oligarchs and plutocrats that run the country? And all these things that President Trump says about increasing the War Department, I don't call it defense, War Department, what is the benefit for the average working person in the country? Why do we need all of this military equipment, billions or trillions of dollars of this equipment? Why don't we look about the social and economic benefit of the masses of people that live in the country? Why have we got all those poor people? That is by design. So, you know, people have to get to that, and all this competition between the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, that's a distraction. They're both on the same team with the same goal in mind, to enrich the people who are in charge of the oligarchy and their assistant plutocrats. That's it. People have to get that. There's no future in thinking that the Democrats are on the people's side and the Republicans aren't. And what, people are just confused. And that's what we got today. And we got to get to the point where we look through, do our analysis, and make some changes in terms of the way we act. In terms of things that you can do immediately, work on a very local level. I remember one time I called in and talked about how to get trees, how to get things done in your community, how to light fire to those local politicians and do something about that. So that is the way I look at this thing. I'm not worried about all the rhetorical nonsense that these people talk.
But it is very heavy rhetorical nonsense, just the same, with some pretty devastating impacts that would be felt immediately and that will affect literally the whole nation and even people outside of it. So there's some heavy, heavy consequences that we are faced with, and at a time when our defenses are very much down.
Yes. That certainly is true, but the way the ruling class is able to split up this country and have groups fighting against each other, mostly on basis of so-called race and whatnot, they're able to confuse people so badly that they can get away with stealing the people's wealth in terms of the work they do and the resources of the country, and they don't give a darn about the environment and the things that people should be concerned with. And just so long most of the infrastructure stumbles along, they'll go with that. It's all about the goal. The mission of the ruling class is to provide wealth for itself, and it never has enough.
Do you see yourself, even though you've made clear what your views are, do you see yourself in any way changing or accommodating a different stance simply to help create a mass of resistance just for this time because it's necessary?
Well, for me at this point, My stance is to try to reach out to people and explain to them and get them to look into how the system runs. That's what I do. And I do it whenever I can, wherever I can. And it's not an easy task to do that because people are so ingrained that they will resist and fight against you, and especially in the black community now, if you talk against the Democrat Party, some people will get very offended, and they have very short memories. So the ruling class, being as shrewd as it is able to manipulate people, and they understand propaganda, they understand the short memory of people, and they play it beautifully for themselves. And that's what's going on, and I feel that we have to get beyond that. I don't know exactly everything to do because they control the media, you know, and people are glued in front of the television sets, and they control the written media also. So it's not an easy task, but I don't give up. I speak out about it when I can.
Well, thank you. John from New Jersey, you're on the air, and probably you'll be our last caller today.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes. I'm glad you're here. You have a great
thank
show.
You. Me too. I'm glad I'm here too. Thank you.
Listen, I tell you, I have a pretty hopeless scenario. I mean, I for the longest time now, I've been calling this a good cop, bad cop scenario. Good cops being the quote unquote Democrats, the bad cops being the Republicans, and the people are being crushed in the middle. There's only one way out of this. These people live their lives and they only understand one thing, and that is force. They don't understand anything else. They have to be forced to do what it is, to do the right thing, in effect. That's what needs to happen. And I'm so sick and tired of everybody going, you know, I mean, when Barack came in the first time, I was so excited, you know, wow, here's this possibility, you know. It turned out to be, it just dashed my hopes completely. When he first came out and made his first speech to the, I don't think it was the State of the Union, but it was his first speech, and he never even mentioned universal health care. Never even mentioned it. I called my friend, and he said to me, and I said two words, and he said, sold out. And that's what's going on. I remember John Cleese was on the Bill Maher show, and Bill Maher said, so what do you think the problem is with the country? And he said, the country, the world, he said, everyone is lying. They're all lying. They can't lie fast enough to cover up the last lie. They let things slide. They let Building 7 slide so that they, all of those culprits could get away with what they did, the Reichstag in America, when they took down those two buildings. Because they needed to, because one of the buildings was half empty, they couldn't rent the place. It's unbelievable what's going on. And another friend said, the problem is we're all wimps. He's right about that, too. We are all wimps, because going out there with flags and signs and stuff like that is going to only get us kicked in the teeth again. It's beyond reason.
Scenario, what therefore is your view about this force that must be exerted if we're going to get out of this in any equitable way?
If half of the people, I figure, in the military had to go into the military because they couldn't get a job anyway, and not unlike famous football player that they I believe, assassinated because he was going to have a press conference. His name escapes me at the moment, but I mean, what is it? Half of the military has to say, guess what? I'm not on your side anymore. I'm on the side of the people. That might be our only shot. That and the fact half of the police department. I can't believe that all the people in the police department are that naive to not realize who the bad guys are, who the terrorists are. What if the country is going around the world, has wars going on all over the place? Can you name it? What other country?
Well, at the moment, I could say that there are very, very, very few, but the United States would top the list.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you know, I mean, really. And this whole thing, it's all about fear. They're going to scare us all to death. We're going to cower in the corner, and then they're going to come in and take the gold out of our teeth. So I really don't know what else to say about this thing, except I'm thinking about going back to the church, you know, because that might be the only help.
A whole other kind of nightmare that you're conjuring up there for yourself.
Well, believe me,
well, look,
that's a joke.
We do have to take a look at this. This is a very serious point, I think, just on the basis of what does it mean to be a citizen? And what is the relationship between organized government and the power of the citizen? This is where we are. Things are happening. They will continue to happen, except that we will probably have close to zero input in what happens, and we will take 100% of the hit of whatever happens. This is the dilemma. This is the quintessential dilemma of, quote, U.S. democracy, unquote. And here we are at that point. The systems that we supposedly democratically elect are not functioning in our interests at all. And they have the power and the protection of that power to do whatever it is they want. We just have to live with it. And does that not suggest that we need to revise our thinking about government and our own role? This is the question that we've been talking about for quite some time. Thank you so much for joining us today and for participating. And we can certainly make more room for tomorrow. I see many people did not get in today in the conversation. And I like the idea of providing space for people to talk. Stay tuned. Coming up next, NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Give your love, live your life.